Welcome to A Flock of Donkeys, with your host, Adam Emmert.
Is he half, like, cowboy, half Japanese? Nope. Like, who is this guy?
And Jared Tim.
Could you imagine John Elway riding Thunder? I love Thunder.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to A Flock of Donkeys, your Seahawks and Broncos podcast with a West Coast bias. I'm your co-host, Adam Emmert, the man sitting to me across the table here.
Sitting to you?
Sitting next to me. Across the table is the man who is not the current champion at Beersby, Jared Tim. How's it going today, man?
That's good. I'll take my losses in stride, though. Yeah, yeah. It's preseason Beersby.
It's no. Not pre.
Actually, it's mid-season Beersby.
It's mid-season Beersby.
It's all right. I mean, you can't win them all the time. I did go 4-0 the last time I played, so I was feeling pretty
good.
Yeah,
that wasn't against me. Yeah,
whatever.
So
I normally win that.
Anyways, an epic weekend for us. We're coming at you today from a little bit cooler Missoula, Montana. Finally got some rain last night for the first time.
You know, now that, you know, I've done a lot of the summer things. I've been on the rivers, the lakes. I've done all that stuff. Aside from a couple of maybe backpacking trips this fall, I'm ready for the snow, for skiing. I want some cold weather, man.
Fucking over the heat. I'm done.
Yeah, I'm over the heat for sure.
Yeah.
I love the snow.
Well, folks, today we are drinking the Red Hook ESB beer. It is actually
extra special bitter.
It's all of those things, and I actually like it quite a bit. But we'll talk about that more in the middle of the pod. So check us out for the ever popular beer review, and we'll kind of go from there. So today, folks, since we can't remember which we talked about first on the last pod,
and it's way too much work to go back and.
Yeah, that's like effort.
Well, actually, we talked about both of them because we played you guys.
Right,
so.
I was even thinking the pod before that. I don't remember. We're going to flip a coin to see whether we go
we're smart
with Chicken Scratch or Donkey Spit. So, tails for Chicken Scratch. And it's heads.
Heads. We might as well start with the best first, right?
Well, we're going to... That's not even how that goes, Jared. We discussed this once before. I mean,
this is the second time in as many weeks, whereas our first team offense has really just had no problems moving the ball against two of the premier defenses in the NFL. I'm feeling pretty good about that.
That's
true. The rest of Broncos country is too.
That's true. Yeah, you guys looked pretty good. So you had the Rams.
We did.
And it was was that the first home game for you guys?
Fuck, dude, I don't know.
I think it is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, it is, because we played the Niners in San Francisco, and we played you guys in Seattle.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
So, yeah, this was our home preseason opener. And, you know, much to the liking, I think, of a lot of the Seahawks fans also, we fucking drubbed these guys. I mean, the score, again, was 27-26. We'll get into that later and why that happened. But, holy crap, we beat the shit out of these guys almost the entire game.
You, your guys' ones had their way with their ones. There's no doubt about that. You guys moved the ball up and down the field. One thing that really stood out to me was your guys' pass protection.
Our pass protection was unbelievable.
That was impressive, considering that the Rams are, a team with a good defensive line, in my opinion.
Their defensive line, I felt, is one of the physically strongest in the NFL. You saw them overpower a lot of offensive lines last year, especially when they would play the 49ers. And, you know, they gave you guys a hell of a time, too.
Yeah.
And we protected Peyton Manning really well the entire game. I think he took maybe one shot.
Mm.
That was it.
Yeah, he did take
one
pretty good
one. And that was because a missed block by Monte Ball. So,
yeah.
You know, you got to pick up those blitzes. But we only gave up 50 yards on the ground. We also put up 133 rushing yards against these guys who are supposed to be pretty stacked up front.
Sure.
And, you know, we had 27 first downs to their 11. That was dominating. We ran 83 plays the entire game. 49 of them Peyton Manning got off in the first half.
That's insane.
That's unbelievable. I don't know if that's some kind of preseason record, but our goal, as we talked about this several times in the podcast, the goal of the Denver Broncos was to be as fast as possible and to run as many plays as they possibly can. I think 49 and one half has probably exceeded what they would have expected.
That's a shit ton. And part of that is that
shit ton.
It's a shit ton. And part of that has to do with the fact is that your defense was consistently shutting the Rams offense down.
It was. We gave up 198 yards all game.
A lot of three and outs. Mm-hmm. You know, Bradford looked like he always looks, where if he's a little bit off a rhythm, the play's over. But, you know, he had a couple nice throws there that were on rhythm. But DRC, Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, he looked pretty good in coverage for most of the game.
Yeah, he actually played really well, and we're going to need him to step up, which we kind of, you know, we brought him on a one-year contract, which was, you know,
That's perfect.
It is perfect. There's no risk there, really, and yeah, he stepped it up. I even thought, you know, he's not going to make the roster, but Quentin Jammer played pretty well. We actually moved him over to cornerback for this game, and
it was in
the second half, but, you know, he probably won't find a roster spot, but I was pretty pleased with the way that our cover's cornered. I thought that was nice.
Your cover's cornered?
Corners covered. Damn it.
Well, you know, your guys' cover corners are pretty good. They are pretty good. Although you did say that Champ Bailey was in a walking boot and crutches the other day, and that's
he's not on the crutches anymore. But that's where he started after that injury. Yeah.
I didn't realize it was that significant.
They're not really sure if he's even going to be back for the first week. You know, let alone even see significant time in week two.
So who are your starting corners at that point?
We have DRC. We have Chris Harris on the other side, and then we'll most likely go with Tony Carter in the slot.
I like Tony Carter.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah.
And Kayvon Webster, we drafted him this year a little bit later on, but, man, he's really impressed me on the outside. He's been improving. Omar Bolden, I don't think he hasn't quite recovered from that knee injury yet. You know, he looked a step behind when he was on special teams, and Kayvon Webster, I think, is going to be, if he's not already, is going to be listed ahead of him as far as our depth chart goes. So.
Gotcha.
I think we'll be fine in the corners.
So what were your thoughts about the running backs in this game? Because I know that, you know, they all kind of seem to have a little bit of an up and down game to me as I look at it. You know,
As far as up and down, I think the guy who played most solid was Noshon. I think he had a solid game the entire time, and he is head and shoulders above any of the other running backs as far as pass protection.
Yeah.
So. I told you this before. I wouldn't be offended if Noshon Moreno was our starter week one. I hope to God that he is. I mean, Ronnie Hillman fumbled the ball yet again.
Yet again.
He's listed number one on our depth chart, but how much can you really trust him? If you go back to our last season, those first five games, fumbling the ball was our biggest problem. That's why we lost a lot of those games in turnovers, which we turned the ball over four times once again this game, which is why the score was so close. But I think Hillman, he might be working his way out of that starting role. I'm not so sad about that. If every one of our running backs, the three of them in a rotation, were to get 7 or 8 carries per game, all of them, I'd be fine with that. Because we even talked about how you wanted these guys being full throttle come the end of the season. Because you take a pounding for 16 weeks with
so
one bye week in the middle. That's a bitch, dude. So if we can give 7 or 8 carries to all three of these guys, and when I say all three of these guys, I mean Monte Ball, Ronnie Hillman, and Noshon Moreno. I'd love to see them all get a fair share of the carries.
Yeah, so kind of the idea being is that you distribute those carries over the course of the season so that when you get towards the end of the season, you know, your main back isn't completely worn down.
Yeah.
And that makes a big difference when you head into the playoffs, you know?
And I feel like once we kind of get towards week 14, 15, 16, 17, kind of in the end and start to make our run of the playoffs, one of these guys is going to be head and shoulders above the other guys. I think one of them is kind of distance himself from the pack. And so if he's only getting 7 to 8 carries per game all year long, he's going to be fresh if we increase his workload come those games.
So you kind of think that it's going to take a fair amount of the season to really shake out who is your lead back, really, when it's all said and done.
I do, because Ronnie Hillman and Monte Ball are still having a little bit of trouble in the pass protection, which is why I think Moreno's automatically going to get 7 to 8 carries a game.
Sure.
You know, just because we're going to want him in the game. And you can't put him in the game just to pass protect because that's a dead giveaway what we're going to do.
Right, yeah.
So you're
going
to have to still give him in some carries. But I think Monte Ball's, he's looking pretty good. He did drop one pass. He just started to run before he caught it.
Yeah, wide open.
Yeah.
That was a touchdown.
Oh, no, he would have gotten caught before the goal line. There were like three guys. But he would have got within the 5-yard line. And it's a third and easy, you know.
Yeah.
So I think his running's gotten a lot better. Ronnie Hillman's running has gotten significantly better. He's got way more power. He runs lower to the ground, but you know that's the third time he's dropped the ball in 2 weeks.
That's one thing that did stick out to me about Hillman was that his pad level when he's running seems to be much lower now than it was, you know, say last year.
And there's a couple of times where last year he would have just gotten arm tackled like it was no problem. It would have been a 2-yard gain. Instead, he's running through these now, and he's actually knocked a couple of people over. Noshon had a mean stiff arm on the sideline, man.
Yeah, I did.
I don't know. I like Noshon Moreno. I think he's consistent. I think you can trust him more than any other back on our squad. I don't see why he wouldn't be starting week one. I really don't know. Of course, I'm not in training camp. I'm not in the practices. I'm not in the meeting rooms. But to me, I mean, Moreno, it's a dead giveaway at this point. When you got two other young guys, a guy who's having trouble holding onto the football, I don't see why Moreno doesn't start.
Gotcha. So, you know, I look at that, and Monty Ball, I thought, had a pretty solid game, you know, short of the one drop, short of the missed block.
But had his first touchdown.
Yeah, had his first touchdown. Overall, I thought he was solid. Hillman looks like the more explosive player.
Oh, big time.
And that's one of those guys that you might possibly want to have in the lineup more as the season progresses. Maybe he gets just a little bit more experience because he didn't play a ton last year.
No, he didn't. He only played out of necessity towards the end of the year when Willis McGahee was out. Then Moreno came in, lit it up, and then he went out. And then Ronnie Hillman started to get more carries, which he did not fumble. So maybe this is just a couple of games of a fluke, and maybe he fixes it right now, which was what I'm hoping for. Because like you said, he is our most explosive runner.
Yeah.
And you know, as far as our running backs go, that's pretty much it right there. I think they all showed some promise, though.
Special teams was interesting to me for you guys.
Interesting or just completely shitty?
Well, I was trying to be nice. That's what I went with interesting.
Fuck. Okay. Yeah. If there are two areas of concern for me, which there are three.
Okay.
So I think number one is our offensive line depth. Yeah, I'm a little bit worried about that while players are coming back, but, you know, we've drugged that topic through the mud, so...
Well, there is new development that we haven't talked about since it's gone down, and that's Moffitt. The Moffitt trade.
Yeah, I like the Moffitt
You guys
trade.
Brought in Moffitt from the Seahawks. We brought in...
Silver Saliga. Which he was never going to play for us. He's not a bad player.
Sure.
We just always had talent in front of him.
Yeah.
And so that's... It was a smart move for us. I think he helps you guys out on your defensive line depth. And you're a guy who's always liked Moffitt.
I like Moffitt a lot. I think you guys got yourself a really awesome player with this. I mean, it's not that he's the greatest lineman in the world.
But he can be solid.
He's more than solid. He's consistent. He's smart. And he's one of the best locker room guys you could possibly have. The dude is freaking hilarious.
Yeah, I was pretty... You know, when he was getting traded to the Browns, I'm kind of glad that didn't go through. And as far as... the reports go, I guess they were just worried about a lingering issue with his knee.
He had a knee surgery 2 years ago, and it's taken him a while to come back from that, but he's fine. That really wasn't a problem.
It was just one of those red flags, I think, where the Browns looked to see what they were giving up as far as what they were getting in return, and they just didn't see the value of it, so they just stopped it, you know?
Well, and every medical staff is going to have a different evaluation, yeah. And that's all fine.
I think this trade between our two teams with Moffitt and Saliga, I think it's perfect.
I'm sad to see him leave, to be honest, Moffitt.
I'm happy he left Seattle.
Yeah. But hopefully that helps to address that offensive line depth concern that you were talking about.
Now we're not one injury away from, oh, fuck, we're two.
Right. And that's actually manageable.
That
two
is
injuries
manageable
away.
Because we'll start getting some players back, too. Especially come late October, early November. So
right.
I think that
was
that
one
really
of your
helps.
Big concerns.
That
was
one of the big concerns.
Offensive line depth.
The second one has to be special teams. Turnovers, you can kind of fix that. But my number two pet peeve is special teams because they're often overlooked and underrated. If you're turning the ball over on special teams, if you're giving up touchdowns, if you're missing field goals, which we had one blocked, you know, you're just going to cause your team – well, fuck, I don't know what you're going to cause your team, but it's going to be a bitch, dude. You can't recover from those things. If you're giving up good field position every time their offense gives a ball, your defense is going to be on the field a lot. You're going to be giving up points. And once again, you can dominate a football game but only win 27-26.
Exactly.
You know, we gave a lot of shit up on special teams to you guys, and this is just the second week in a row.
Special teams is a third of the game.
And
when you have a guy that goes back there to bring back punts that basically rubs a little Crisco on his hand before he goes to try to catch every punt in Holiday.
Mitts.
You know, absolutely. Jeez. He's got – I don't know if it's the small hands or what the deal is, but he – I'm talking about Holiday, Trenton Holiday. He's very electric when he has the ball in his hand.
He's exciting to watch, and he's fun to watch.
It's just a matter of keeping the ball in his hands.
High risk, high reward, man. And with a team like this, that's why we put Jim Leonard back there a lot last year. He was a possession guy because he does not fumble punt returns.
Sure.
You know, he's not a great runner, but that's why we put him back there is just because if they're going to be on the 50-yard line punting to us and you're going to be catching it right around the 10, you don't want to fumble there. You just want a guy who can catch the ball. Are we going to be doing that with Eric Decker? I mean, he has been fielding some punts, so is Wes Welker. Are these some possession guys where we're going to put them back there because we don't trust Holiday to catch the fucking football?
I don't know. Does
Holiday
make the team at that point?
Yeah, he drops a lot of balls in training camp and in practice and even in games.
He had that one horrible route at the end of the game.
Oh, God, that route was putrid, man. He totally gave up on it. He saw the corner playing outside coverage, and he had this little outside hitch. And he just quit on the route, and that's when Brock threw the ball. Okay, it was a bad throw. It was
not
a bad
decision. Yeah.
But if you run through your route, chances are it's not going to get intercepted. It's just going to, you know, it's going to hit one of you. It's going to be an incomplete pass. Instead, it was intercepted, and it was just a nightmare. But yeah, Holiday completely took off his route. So
had a hard time handling one punt there. And
yeah.
I mean, you guys happened to recover, so that was nice. But. You know, Tavon Austin, he ripped off a return. Like,
yeah,
that was...
and these are running lanes that are wide open from the get-go. We saw, you know, Golden Tate have one against us a weekend before. And these are running lanes where these guys aren't have to be making shifty moves. All they got to do is fucking run full speed ahead, and they're not even touched.
It's a little bit of lane discipline, probably.
It's a lot of lane discipline. We got guys fucking crisscrossing all over the place. And I don't know if that's just we're trying to mismatch guys out there or
maybe try new things. Try different
trying
guys.
To find roster spots for these guys.
Sure.
But as far as Trenton Holiday goes, do you keep a guy on the roster because he's going to touch the ball once a game? That's depends, where it's at for me.
Depends on how electric he is. You know, we did that with Leon Washington for a couple of years there.
Yeah, but he didn't have the fumbles.
No, he was money. so that makes it a tough decision at that point.
I'll be curious to see, but I know that a lot of people in the front office of the Denver Broncos, they like that kind of excitement.
Mm-hmm.
And so they might just keep him around for that.
Sure.
Just be like, hey, give us a spark every once in a while.
Sure.
So, I mean, maybe that's where they go with it. I don't really know. But, yeah, the turnovers, fuck.
Yeah.
You know, same thing. We're fumbling the ball. We threw those two interceptions. One of them, the dude made an awesome play. Ogletree made a hell of a catch.
That was on that pretty Peyton impressive.
Manning
throw.
And even Peyton Manning in the interview said, I might have underthrew it a touch because it was Julius Thomas. And Julius Thomas could have reached a ball that was thrown even 2 feet higher.
Sure.
But
it wasn't the worst throw ever made.
No, it wasn't the worst throw. Dude made a hell of a catch. The one that Osweiler threw, you know, Holiday quit on his route. I don't know about that. But, yeah, the Hillman fumble, and let's see what the hell is the other one. Oh, the fumbled snap by Osweiler. That was the other one. In the pouring rain. You know, that shit's going to happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, a couple of things that I saw real quick with our offense that I liked a lot.
Yeah.
Throughout the entire game, 19 of our catches came through wide receivers, which means we're still spreading it to the side. We're still spreading the ball out rather than just hitting checkdown routes. And St. Louis was playing deep the entire game. You saw it. You know, Peyton Manning was going underneath the entire time.
That 5 to 7 yard area was open all day. Your guys' tight ends abused their linebackers.
That's exactly what happened.
In coverage.
And we did all of this without Wes Welker, without Joel Dreesden.
Right.
We ran the ball effectively. We threw the ball effectively without two of our starters.
Yeah.
You know, and I think if when you add Wes Welker to that, it just increases everything that much more.
Yeah.
And as far as our catches go, too, our running backs had 8 of the catches all games, too. So, I mean, we're still hitting our checkdowns, but 19 catches to the wide receivers. That's the one thing that impresses me the most. That means you're not just kind of settling for these little checkdowns. You're actually running routes and you're calling plays in association with what the defense is giving you.
Right.
Rather than just checking it down every time, getting 2 to 3 yards.
Yeah.
I mean, Demaryius Thomas had 7 catches. Eric Decker had 6. Julius Thomas had 4. I think those are going to be 3 guys who get the ball a lot. Wes Welker's going to get it a lot, too. Of course, he didn't play. But
well, when
I
you
like
run that many plays, everybody's going to get it a lot.
Everybody's
going
to get a lot of balls.
Yeah.
But, lots of balls to be had.
Yeah.
Another thing is Brock Osweiler finally got a couple of drives with the first team.
Yeah.
You know, the first one was a 3-and-out. It was just kind of a sloppy possession.
Yeah.
But his second drive let's see, it was 11 plays, 79 yards, touchdown.
Yeah.
I thought he looked really sharp.
He looked sharp early.
Yeah, he had a
struggled
couple of
a little
throws
more later.
Like, holy shit, dude, he's got a cannon. But, you know, and that's pretty much what I saw out of our offense. And the amount of plays that you run, what this does is if a team comes out in a nickel, you're going to gash them with the run game if they come out in a nickel. But if they come out in a 4-3 and they're not able to substitute because we're running so many plays, then we're going to throw all over the place. Or then we're going to force them to use timeouts. It puts their – running this many plays puts anybody's defense in a huge bind.
Well, it's that Chip Kelly model that they ran at Oregon. You know, that volume playbook kind of deal.
Well, it's what Belichick's been trying to do for
years. Well, yeah, and
he has done.
That's it. Yeah, he visited with Chip Kelly the year before, you know, to try to – institute a little bit more of that in the Patriots offense. And you saw that last year in the Patriots offense.
And it's effective.
It is effective.
When your defense doesn't have time to substitute to get fresh guys in there or to even change up their defensive formations, you know, you're going to have mismatches all over the field. And when you got guys like the Thomases or Welker or Decker out there, there's mismatches everywhere.
What does that do for your guys' defense, though, at the end of the day? I mean, when they're going to end up being on the field so quickly, you know, time and time again, because you guys are running that hurry-up style, I mean, that does make them a little more tired when it's all said and done.
A lot of the things, too, is that when you're running so many plays, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're scoring quickly. A lot of our drives were well over 5 minutes long. You know, so your defense does have some time to rest. It's the opposing defense that gets really tired. And I think with this, you know, I think our first drive was like, it was under 5 minutes. And if you're consistently moving the ball that quickly, not just getting that many plays off, but actually getting chunk yardage and your defense is out on the field a lot, I think it'll hurt them a little bit. But I think when you're running this many plays and our offense has the ball more, it throws an opposing team's offense out of rhythm.
Yeah, that's
true. It's tough. And you get 1-3-and-out, you may not have the ball for 12, 14 minutes.
Yeah. One of the things that really stood out to me about your guys' defense this game, in contrast to the 49ers game, was your guys' contain on the outside for the run game and how your linebackers flowed to the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have that over-pursuit that you talked about earlier in the preseason.
Yeah.
It looked like guys had a little bit more gap discipline and were playing within themselves and within the system. and you guys really flowed to the ball well.
Mm-hmm.
Von Miller had a near sack somewhere in the game there. He was
just barely missed it.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
I think our outside pursuit on the run, it has improved immensely. That was one of the things you can tell Jack Del Rio wanted to get to the bottom of, and I think he did. And a lot of that, I think, helps with the speed of our linebackers. When you got Von Miller and Wesley Woodyard and Danny Trevathan out there, those guys are fast. You know, these guys have safety speed.
Yeah.
Wesley Woodyard, actually, early in his career, we rotated him at safety a little bit. Shanahan
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Another thing I learned about him in this game, because the Broncos Homer broadcast, I mean the CBS Sports National broadcast.
Oh, God, that was putrid Homer broadcasting.
Holy cow.
Oh, God, it was a love fest for the Broncos. It was hilarious.
I mentioned a couple Rams players here just early, just so that, you know, we did a little better job of that than the love fest that Dan Dierdorf had for Peyton Manning. But one thing that I learned off of one of those sideline interviews about Wesley Woodyard was that he's been a team captain for 8 years in a row. Or something like that.
Five.
However many years he's been in the league. Every year he's been.
Is this a sixth? I can't exactly remember. Yeah, he was a captain when he first came on. He was a teams monster. And so he was a special teams captain. And I think, I could be wrong on this, but a lot of Broncos fans will remember a guy by the name of Keith Burns. He was our special team captain for a long time, who then became our special teams coach. And that's when I believe he was the one who named Wesley Woodyard the captain, because he saw a lot of himself. And then he just skyrocketed ever since then, and now he's going to be our everyday linebacker with Von Miller.
He's got a little captain in him. He's going to get that done for you.
Yeah, our defense pursues well, and now that we're moving Woodyard to the middle, Nate Irving will be our strong side linebacker while Miller's gone, and Danny Trevathan will be on the weak side, who Danny Trevathan is also our other nickelback. So usually when we move Von Miller to defensive end in our nickel packages, we'll have Trevathan and Woodyard at our linebackers, but now they'll both be playing in a 4-3 too. So these guys are going to have an increased workload.
Sure.
But I'm okay with that, because they're both fucking good.
That's true. You guys have a lot of depth at linebacker. You know, that's probably why you let go of Joe Mays earlier this year.
Yeah, I would imagine that's why. You know, Stuart Bradley came in. He'll be gone for a little while. He had surgery on his wrist. But, you know, Nate Irving just dominated the run this last game, too. He blew through a couple of gaps. You're just like,
he
came through like a wrecking ball.
That guy is enormous. I mean, he's like the size of one of those orcs from Lord of the Rings.
That's what he looks like.
Yeah. I mean, if I were casting that movie again, he'd be one, you know, one of the guys I'd choose for that. It is unbelievable. And he blew through the hole and just wrap people
he
up.
He is our wrecking ball.
He's a thumper.
He's strongest against the run, and he has much improved in pass coverage, too. That was the area that they were really worried about him.
This is his third year now? This
will be his third year, yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, I think as far as our linebackers go, missing Von Miller, yeah, that's always a, you know, you don't want to be without your premier defensive player.
Right.
But it's not dire.
It's not dire, especially with your guys' first 6 weeks of the schedule. It's not like you have the hardest teams in the world coming up.
We do play the Giants and the Ravens early on, but I think we'll be just fine in those games.
You'll be fine.
You know,
Von Miller is not going to be the difference between a win or a loss.
I don't think so. You know, and then once we get Von Miller back when we go to Lucas Oil Stadium, you know, for Peyton's first game back in Indianapolis, that's his first game back. So I think it just makes us that much better when he comes back. I still think we're a great defense without him, but we're even better with him. So it'll be an added bonus when he comes back. And on our defense, I thought our coverage was great. I thought our defensive line got really good pressure, especially against the run. You know, we held them to 50 yards on the ground the entire game.
There was no running room on the ground.
No, and Knighton and Vickerson in the middle, boy, dude, you on first down, you're not going to run the ball against those guys up the middle.
It's
and
tough.
Now that our outside pursuit has really improved, I just see a team who every single week in the preseason has gotten better on offense and on defense. It's still the turnovers and the special teams that have, honestly to me, I think they've gotten worse. You know, you don't want to get worse throughout the preseason, but, you know, you take the good with the bad, and we have improved on both sides of the ball as far as offense and defense goes. So I just hope that we can patch that up before week one.
Well, some of it, too, you know, with the turnovers and the special teams play is the fact that during training camp, with the new rules of the CBA, there's really no live hitting. Nobody knows, you know, when they're finishing a play or things like that, what it's supposed to feel like, what it's like to really get rocked when you have the ball in your hands
and have arms stripping at you the entire time.
Yeah, to simulate those turnovers. Or, for example, on special teams, you know, maintaining that lane discipline and running down the field and hitting a guy while you're in. Because that's the most violent collisions in the sport is on kickoffs.
Full speed
collisions. And when guys are going full speed both directions. And that's one of those things that's limited during training camp, you know, leading up to the preseason. Mm-hmm. So I think that has...
Maybe there's an acclimation period there.
Yeah, I think that's something that you'll see a little bit better job done once the season starts.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
And I hope you're right.
Just silver lining in this.
Really hope you're right. I mean, Steven Johnson, though, he's a third-year linebacker.
Yeah.
He was one of our bright spots as far as special teams go.
Showed his face to the crowd and made a tackle.
Man, that dude was running all over with his helmet off. That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Just didn't even give a shit about his own health, man.
Didn't make no never mind. He just... He just had his helmet off and ran right in there and just stuck his nose right in there. That's a tough guy.
Oh, God, he was tough. But, you know, just as far as the Broncos go, what I've seen from now, our third preseason game, is everybody's gotten better. I think our offense is really close to where we want to be.
Yeah.
As far as the beginning of the season. And I think we'll just continue to get better. Now all the starters are going to have the week off. You know, we go play Arizona, and then that's it. And then Thursday night, here we go.
And it's here.
And it's here.
You guys are kicking off
the NFL kickoff game.
The season.
Thursday night against the fucking Ravens. God, I can't wait for that game.
It's going to be awesome. I can't believe how quickly this has gone.
No, me neither.
And the fact that it's all here, that we actually have been seeing some live football, I'm freaking fired up.
And we have some things to talk about. And you can see the progress of all the teams in the NFL, really, throughout the preseason. And there's a lot of people out there who say, oh, the preseason doesn't matter. It matters big time. There are roster spots at stake. You got to be ready. You got to be hitting on all cylinders once the first week comes along. So, you know, the preseason to me is very important, and that's why we've been following it. Yeah. That's why we're talking about
it. Is there anything you want to talk about the upcoming Cardinals game at all? I mean, these fourth preseason games to me are, you know, there's just not much there that I really give too many shits about.
These fourth preseason games to me, I think...
Worse than the Pro Bowl, right?
They are worse than the Pro Bowl. The only thing you can really get out of a fourth preseason game, after I just talked about how important preseason games are.
Well, the first three.
Yeah. So I think the only thing that you're going to get out of a fourth preseason game is that if there's any sort of roster spot controversy, there's two to three of them.
Yeah.
That's what will be ironed out throughout the course of a whole entire game.
And you'll know what that looks like a little better here in the next couple days as the first wave of cuts come down.
We already had our first wave of cuts.
Okay. Anybody stand out on that cut list?
Surprising.
Okay.
When we talked about the holiday, the Trinan holiday thing earlier, I remember I mentioned it was several podcasts ago about this guy, Quincy McDuffie, who was on our depth chart at like number 6 or 7 wide receiver. He was an undrafted free agent out of college. And but he was an electric return man. I was like, well, if he can catch a football from Peyton Manning and maybe not drop some punts, maybe he'll be the guy that kind of gets Trinan Holiday off the roster. But we cut him, so that's what makes me think that Trinan Holiday probably will be on the roster.
Okay, well, that makes some sense.
Other than that, you know, we didn't cut anybody that we didn't know was coming.
Gotcha.
That was pretty much it.
Okay. Well, good deal. Well, I think with that, we'll probably wrap up with the donkey spit portion here.
Another thing, penalties. Fuck penalties. We had another 9 for 65 yards. But
well, yeah, let's talk penalties for a second. Do you need to get that off your chest? Because you had a couple illegal formations.
Well, like, we always do that. Peyton Manning teams, even if you look back at the Tony Dungy days, in their preseason games, those illegal formations were everywhere. And it's both sides of the ball. I saw the Rams do it a couple of times. But when you're in an audible ran offense and you got guys shifting all over the place, you got guys coming to motion sometimes two at a time, there's going to be a lot of things you have to iron out. The funny thing is this happened last year also, but once week one came, we didn't have any.
Yes.
And so I'm not really too concerned about those. It's just, you know, we still got the holding calls and that kind of shit. I don't want to see under the penalty column in the stats 9.
Well, there's a number.
I want to see 4 max.
There's a number for that that's worse, and it looks like 14. I mean, we'll get to that here.
Well, the Rams had 11 too. So, I mean, some of these games are tough to watch because there were a couple of times, I think it was in your game, where, you know, there were 5 different punts before you guys could even get past the goddamn play.
It was the punt that would never fucking end.
We can get to that later.
We will.
But yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, preseason's over. I think all we have to look for now is roster spots.
Yeah.
And if we can clean up some things by that Thursday night game against the Ravens.
Yeah. So. Well, with that said, we'll wrap up Donkey Spit here. Just wanted to give the fans here a couple of calls to action. It's time for you guys to get a little more involved. Do better, honestly.
Like, a lot of people listening, but nobody chiming in, really.
Yeah, I mean, a couple. You know, got a funny tweet from Robert on Twitter Just asked me if I had gone ballistic yet about the penalties in the last game for the Seahawks.
Which he kind of was, yeah.
I may have thrown my hat at one point during a preseason game.
Only once,
game.
Though.
That was pretty good.
But it was a preseason game, which he
threw
a hat.
So hit us up on Twitter, at A Flock of Donkeys, or find us on Facebook. Like us on Facebook. We need that. That helps our
yeah,
ratings
send us
and all
some
that
message.
Stuff.
Do some.
Yeah. On top of that, freaking chime in and tell us what you're thinking about the teams and how things are going.
Yeah, we like to discuss the NFL, especially our teams. And so it's always nice to get a different perspective on things.
Absolutely. So you can do that at afodpodcast@gmail.com, afodpodcast@gmail.com. You can also call and leave a message on our message line, 406-823-0307. Please do that. That would be hilarious. Come on.
We look forward to it.
It's time.
Yeah.
So do better.
Season's almost here. Let's talk. Let's talk.
All right. So grab yourself a beer, folks. We're going to review the Red Hook ESB coming up next. So stay tuned. All righty. We're back, folks.
Correct.
Time for the beer review. And
I love this part.
God, this is the part I might look forward to the most as we do these podcasts. Today we're drinking Red Hook ESB, Red Hook Brewery.
It's a British extra special bitter.
Yeah. Ooh, well done.
All right.
Well done. We talked about how that was going to be difficult to enunciate.
Words are tough for us sometimes, you know?
Well, yeah, especially when you mix a little alcohol in.
And when you're semi-hungover from the weekend after doing these anyways.
Holy cow, yeah. So this beer, this is one of my more favorite summer beers. It's a little lighter. They say it's, you know, an extra special bitter, but it's really not all that bitter.
No, it's hoppy enough. It's good for late summer, I think. You know, right now when we're into August and the beginning of September, kind of pre-Oktoberfest beers, which we'll get into later because they're one of my favorites.
Yeah.
This is a really good beer for the end of summertime.
Yeah, apparently it's made with some caramel malt as well, so that makes it a little extra tasty since it's extra special. But 5.8% by alcohol content. It's technically an amber. This is good stuff.
What do you think the girl meter is on this beer?
I'd say
as
this
far
is
as drinkability.
Drinkability for the girl meter. I'd say this is maybe a 5 on the drinkability scale for.
I kind of thought
ladies.
It was about halfway to myself.
Yeah, because it does have a little bit of that IPA hoppiness to it. You know, that little extra bitter bite to it, but it's not overly.
It's not
pronounced.
Overpowering, so they could still drink it.
Yeah.
Okay. And as far as the word drinkability goes, that is not an Anheuser-Busch thing. Pilsner Urquell came out with that over 100 years ago. Drinkability has something to do with like the gravity of the beer and how fresh and clear it was and all sorts of other things.
There's a scientific formula for drinkability?
There's a scientific formula for that word. And then somehow, I don't know if Anheuser-Busch now owns Pilsner Urquell or however the fuck you pronounce that.
Sure.
But they totally stole that word and I am pissed.
Or maybe they just beat him to the trademark.
Oh,
you know, that could be.
That's just dirty.
Yeah. Oh, well, of course it's dirty. How else does Anheuser-Busch play?
That's the only way they play.
Yeah.
Fuck those guys.
Oh, I need to look up the drinkability formula.
Sure we can come up with that. We'll get back to you in the next beer review about drinkability. Yeah. I'm writing that shit down.
Yeah. Oh, speaking about something that we didn't get back to on one of the previous beer reviews, you had asked me a couple beer reviews ago, would I choose Seahawks or beer?
Yes, have you come up with this?
I have. What it's taken it? A few weeks to actually sit down and think about it and come up with an actual answer. And the answer is beer. I would choose beer. And the reason is the Seahawks make me feel really happy for, you know, the season. And that's nice.
Uh-huh.
But I would enjoy the Seahawks less without the beer. And I don't enjoy beer any less without the Seahawks.
And you couldn't have gotten through the Seahawks seasons in the past without beer.
A few of them, sure.
I would choose beer over football, too, just because it's like a mainstay in my life over the entire year.
Yeah.
You know, we're not drinking 12 beers a day, but
no, like,
I mean, shit.
11? So,
I was going to go 10 and a half.
Yeah.
I would also choose beer over football.
Yeah, and that was a three-week decision for me, actually.
It was tough.
I had to think about that a lot.
Yeah, because, I don't know, football doesn't get you over everything.
No, it sure doesn't. No, beer helps get you over a crappy breakup, like a cold winter day.
Yeah, anything.
Physically exerting yourself too much on any given day, like beer will help out with that as well.
It does, and it's always something to look forward to.
It's a magic elixir.
It is.
Yeah, and we drank a fair amount of that at River City Roots Fest.
River City Roots Fest. Yeah.
I made it.
Railroad Earth played this year. It wasn't bad. They were good. They really came on strong in the end, but Robert Randolph and the Family Band played the year before, and that was just insane.
Yeah.
Those guys were fucking awesome.
Yeah, this is fun stuff. If you guys ever need something to do on this weekend in August, Look up River City Roots Fest here in Missoula, Montana. It is free. It's a free freaking street dance, and it's a free concert, and there's beer, and there's people, and it's awesome.
It's a good time. The thing that I don't like about this is that it signals in the arrival of the kids, the college kids again.
That's true.
Which that makes this whole town busy and
but the scenery increases.
Oh, the scenery was wonderful.
yeah.
But, you know, it isn't any college town. A lot of you probably know it just gets more hectic and busy in and around the town too. You know, sure. It's just everywhere. But sure. River City Roots Fest is good shit.
It's good shit. So
we had a little moonshine.
Yeah.
Definitely not my first brush with moonshine.
Ended up eating a piece of pineapple that had been soaked in moonshine. I think that attributed greatly to the weaving I did in my walking on the whole entire way home. So
just on the way home, I think I was weaving well before that.
I was actually doing well until I got back to your place, picked up my backpack, and then went to walk to my house and realized about 3 blocks away that I needed all the lanes on the sidewalk.
What's kind of funny about Montana is anytime they have these gatherings and stuff, you just look around and everybody's hammered.
Yeah.
People are just drunk everywhere, but there's no problems. There's no fights or anything.
And,
you know, just like we did the boat float. I do the boat float every single year, and that's over on the Yellowstone. They tried to do the same thing over in Sacramento, California, and there were riots and fights breaking out everywhere. I have yet to recall a fight on the boat float in Montana.
That's a good point.
People get happy when they drink here. Because we know how to handle our alcohol because we do it frequently.
Yeah, we do.
So I think we're all seasoned veterans here in Montana. I'm sure there's a lot of you seasoned veterans that are listening to this right now. So this is not against you, but just the populations in general.
Yeah, just come check it out.
I think we drink well.
I do too. I do too. I'm proud of it. So folks, come over to Missoula. Check out River City Roots Fest. Also check out Red Hook Brewery's ESB. Super tasty.
British Extra Special Bitter Beer.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well
Number
done.
Number two.
Okay. Impressive. All right, folks. With that, stay tuned. We'll be right back with some Chicken Scratch.
All right.
Welcome back, folks. It's Chicken Scratch time.
Yeah.
I'm a lot happier, and you heard Jared's enthusiasm. So,
No, this is a great segment for me. I mean, I've watched the games myself. I just get to sit here and listen to you talk, fuck up, and I'll make fun of you at the appropriate times.
Oh, perfect. I'm glad we have that formula figured out at this point, because
this
that's
what I do
that's
right
more
now.
Or less how it goes. But getting a little bit into the Packers game.
Yeah.
Road game, we got out there, hostile crowd. These two teams, they really still don't like each other after the Fail Mary.
No, they hate each other. Golden Tate's still getting booed, you know.
But that was awesome. When he goes back for that punt return and he's
getting
booed.
Well, you know he's going to get booed.
Yeah, he's smiling and nodding his head.
Yeah, what else are you going to do?
Oh, yeah, he enjoys it. So that was kind of fun. But, you know, I thought they were going to replay that probably like 32 times throughout the game, that Fail Mary. I think they only played it once, so congratulations on that.
Yeah, it's about fucking time.
Yeah. So, the game itself, though, was a little choppy for the Seahawks. It was a win, though, which is always nice.
Mm-hmm.
But the offense looked fine early, short of penalties, which we'll get to.
Penalties were brutal again.
That's probably the number one story. So, let's talk about that first, the penalties
in
the game.
Yeah, you have to, because it's just killing your team.
It is. Now, in this game, I'm a little less freaked out about the penalties than the previous one, and I've got a couple reasons why. Number one, we were penalized 14 times for 182 yards. But we were really only penalized, I think, 3 times in the first half or something like that, 3 to 4.
Mm-hmm.
It was much lower, and a couple of those were ticky-tack. Now, one of them that was not ticky-tack was J.R. fucking Sweezy.
That guy's a penalty machine.
Well, now you got him next to Giacomini, who is the other penalty machine.
Man.
And Sweezy comes rolling in after a running play that was well over and just slaunches himself at the pile and knocks a Packer off.
Clay Matthews gets on top of him. He's like, what the fuck are you doing? You
right. Know, he don't know.
That's immature football.
He's a defensive player. He's not that smart. So he switched over to the offensive line. He gets yanked from the game immediately.
Oh, yeah, and he got an earful, too. You can see it on the sideline. Everybody who watched that game saw that.
Everybody that says Pete is just a rah-rah guy and just a player's coach, watch him chew J.R. Sweezy's ass on the sideline. He'll get into you.
Do you think he's in the doghouse at this point? Because he's kind of been plagued with penalties and stuff while he's trying to learn this offensive side.
I don't think so, and I'll tell you why. Because I listened to an interview with Pete Carroll this morning on Brock and Danny, and they brought up Sweezy in the fact that he had that personal foul. And then he had a holding penalty on the drive before.
Yeah.
But holding penalties, that's one of those things where, you know, it was a hold. But those are the things that will or won't get called on any given play. So I don't
Holding penalties are going to happen on the offensive line.
Yeah, I don't get too upset about that. So, you know, listening to Pete Carroll talk about Sweezy today, and he asked if that was going to put him in the doghouse. You know, he talked about the one penalty being completely unacceptable and how they talked to him about it and all that stuff. But he also talked about how much they really love Sweezy and his demeanor and the way he plays the game. And he kind of gushed about him a little bit. So I don't know that Sweezy's in the doghouse per se. It's going to be hard to say exactly what happens. One thing that could possibly happen is Carpenter came back to practice again today. Mm-hmm. You know, if he happens, to be healthy, then he'll play left guard and we'd probably move McQuiston over to right. That'd be my guess anyways. A little more consistent play. I'd like that, but I'm not banking on it.
So since this podcast is from a fan's perspective, as a fan, how much do you trust Sweezy as far as not killing your drives?
On a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah.
Negative 46.
That's what I was curious about. Because,
you know,
even if your coach likes him, there are certain guys on the football field, this way, like we talked about with Trenton Holiday and now Ronnie Hillman fumbling, you don't trust some of these guys.
You get a big play in the Seahawks offense, and you just hold your breath that either Giacomini or Sweezy isn't pulling some boneheaded personal foul after the fucking play to wipe it out.
And right after the play, every single time, I'm looking at the screen looking for flags. I'm looking for yellow laundry out on the field. That's what I was looking for after every single play that you guys were running.
Yeah, and that's...
In both sides of the ball, there are penalties on both sides.
And that's no way to live, Jared. That's no way to live. You know, like, it's just, it's frustrating. It's hard to deal with. But fortunately, the majority of the penalties came in the second half of the game when you had more of the twos and threes in and guys that don't play together and, you know, guys that don't play that often. You're going to see more mistakes made there.
I would have liked to have seen what your guys' secondary would have done against Aaron Rodgers for more than like a drive or two.
Aaron Rodgers was in just for the one drive. Didn't really complete much to the outside. Completed a couple over the middle. Finley had a nice catch. You know, but...
One.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to drop the rest of them.
Well, he dropped that one in the end zone. Yeah. You know, that would have been a miraculous catch. But, yeah, he didn't haul it in. So, you know, that first drive when I looked at the Seahawks offense, 12 plays, 71 yards. The offensive line struggled in pass protection all day and really almost in run blocking, too. It felt like the right side of the line to me was the side that really struggled. That was one thing that really stood out. Luke Wilson had a better game. He did.
You know, you're seeing him improve every single game, I think. I think he's improved mildly every game.
Yeah.
Well, in last game, you know it was the Broncos, but that's a tough defense to go up against.
Sure.
But, you know, when you guys play a defense in the Packers, who neither of us are really sold on their defense, I thought in the beginning of that game, you guys moved the ball incredibly effectively.
Yeah.
And, well, I mean, there are some people out there who still do like the Packers defense. I, for the life of me, cannot understand it. I think they're completely overrated, and I think you guys just exposed everything you needed to. I think you could have dominated that defense for an entire game if your starters would have stayed in the whole game.
Oh, I believe so. The two picks that Russell had, one of them was really fluky. You know, just to bat a ball that gets battered again and into a defender's hand. Like,
that's that's what happens when a quarterback's too short.
That's what's going to happen when your friend's a dickhead that does a podcast with you. He's not too goddamn short, and you know better.
Oh, come on, you could expect me to not throw that in there.
God. Yeah, okay, all right. Fair. All right, that was I set you right up for that.
Yeah, you did, man. I'm going to wait for that.
Oh, Jesus. So he had the one ball tipped, which is no more, no less than Peyton Manning had in his game. So... And then the other pick, that was just a bad decision.
Yeah.
He was trying to hit the receiver, much like he hit Baldwin on the first drive, kind of with the quarterback.
It was that same play on that against that same exact defense.
Same exact coverage. Just the DB had, the trailing DB was closer to the receiver on the second one. Shouldn't have thrown that ball. He's a human being. He's going to make a bad decision now.
Those things happen. Peyton Manning makes bad decisions.
That's fine.
This shit happens.
Yeah. First play of the game, Russell just... took off and ran. That's still going to be a problem for the Packers as the season progresses.
He doesn't take a lot of hits, so that's good about Russell Wilson. But I think all this year he's still going to have to run just because of a mild lack of pass protection.
Oh, definitely.
He's lucky that he can run like he can, because he's gonna bail that offensive line out of a lot of situations.
The pass protection is something that is starting to, I wouldn't say concern me, but it's one of those things where I look at strengths and weaknesses on this team, and it's not a strength.
Sometimes it kind of works out in your favor because you get Russell out in open space. He's getting 15 yards a run, you know. Sometimes it works, but you don't want to have to see your quarterback doing that all the time because he has become such an effective pocket passer.
Absolutely, and he can be on rhythm and all that.
Yep.
So,
big time.
So he was 11 of 17 for 126 yards. Effective enough. Sean McGrath looked good in this game, I thought.
Yeah, boy, the more I watch him play, the more I like the way he plays.
Yeah.
He's a big guy. He blocks well. He's got good hands. He's a solid tight end. He's not a blazer down the field, but he's a possession tight end.
Yeah, he's kind of, think of Jake Ballard when he had that one good year.
Yeah, that's exactly who he is. He's a
not
monster.
Not quite as big, but yeah.
This dude's
6'5", 240 something.
Yeah. All right, you're getting better on your heights and weights, yeah, man. I know you've been paying attention to that.
He's tight end size. So, yeah.
Way to go.
Exactly. So he played well to me. That was good to see. Turbo, he got a lot more of the early carries in the game as opposed to Christian Michael. But Turbo looked great. I thought he ran
running
really
backs
hard.
Are impressive.
Yeah, he busted through a couple arm tackles that he got nailed on during the Broncos game, but he busted right through those in this game. I love the way he looks, but boy, I'll tell you what, Christian Michael, he looks different than all the backs.
Yeah.
That guy.
You know, when they say he's what, how he weighs, I think he's the heaviest running back you guys have.
I think Marshawn is. But
oh really? Okay.
Yeah.
But when they show him next to your other running backs, you're like, he doesn't look that big. But then you look at his lower body, and that's where all his weight's at.
Well, he had that that first run that he really
not that
broke.
I was checking out his ass or anything, but, well, you, no, got, but you see he's a guy's lower body, and they're fucking huge. You
he's
know?
Running down the sidelines, and they kind of had a shot from behind as he's running down the sidelines, and you can just see the outside of his thighs just
they're
like curve out.
He's a monster.
And we both at the same time just went, look at those dudes. Look at that dude's legs.
Or trees, whatever you want to call them.
They're gigantic, but he was electric. I mean, just.
And he's low to the ground. He runs low, too. That's, you know, his center of gravity is so much lower. But
and he's starting to run lower with that pad level, you know? And that's something that comes with just having some game action and things like that. He had that one spin move that was sick.
We were just like, hit the circle button, man.
Whoop! That was it.
If there's one thing that I really like about your guys' running backs, it's that. Since you have three guys that have similar styles, but they're all still mildly quick and fast, you know, they can still break a long run, they can still juke a guy, but they can also run guys over, is when you're getting into games in the fourth quarter down to the trenches, you guys are just going to be steamrolling people up front.
And that's the idea. That's our style of play. Michael, he finished with 97 yards. He actually had a couple nice catches. He had that one-handed catch out of the backfield. That was impressive. I was really excited about that, to see the running backs kind of come through and the running game come alive a little bit more. Because if we can run the ball and we can play the defense that we did, because I haven't started talking about the defense yet. If we can play the defense that we did against the Packers, and granted, it was against a guy who's now no longer a Green Bay Packer, Graham Harrell, for the majority of it. Yeah. But we did shut him down, and Aaron Rodgers didn't do much against our secondary. Earl made a couple really nice tackles. Benson Mayoa really stood out to me in this game, even more so than the other couple games. He was everywhere.
Yeah,
and
he played
hustle,
really well.
His hustle really impressed me. He chased down, who was it? One of their running backs.
Was it Lacey?
Yeah, it might have been. Chased him down on the right sideline on one play. I was really blown away with
the effort level on your guys, the intensity on your guys on the defensive side of the ball was pretty insane. That's why I really would have liked to see Aaron Rodgers go against them a little more, just to see kind of how you guys stack up against the premier.
Yeah. I think you saw that Eddie Lacy, he ended up finishing with negative yardage running. So our run defense, it looked fantastic. That made me feel really great about that. Mm-hmm. Tony McDaniel looked awesome out there, and he needed it.
Yeah, he actually had a really good game. You saw him all over the field.
Yeah, he broke up a pass. Uh-huh. You know, just getting his hands up at the line of scrimmage, and then also was in in the backfield a couple times. I believe he ended up with a sack as well. The new guy, Silver Saliga, who we traded for Moffitt, he actually looked pretty decent out there. That guy is bigger than I remembered him being on the Broncos.
He's a
really
big guy.
Wide.
Yeah, he's a big guy.
Yeah.
You know, you got to hope you can get some production out of him in pads.
Well, two tackles and a sack in this game.
In what quarter? I don't know. You know, against maybe possibly the thirds of the Packers. But
sure,
but that was always the one kind of thing, is he never beat anybody out for a spot.
Right.
With the Broncos, and that's what we continue to wait for. But as far as adding depth, I think he'll patch up a little bit of your guys' depth chart for you.
Sure. Another thing that really was interesting to me was Bruce got in for about 6-7 plays at strong side linebacker. Made one really nice play in the backfield, just burst in there, showing his
speed. Yeah, he just kind of went around three of the dudes who were setting up that screen and just kind of blew it up.
Oh, yeah, just whoosh, just right by him. In on a big hit. So that was good to see. I was really, really liking that. Earl, he caused a fumble in the game. That was great. Also, Winston Guy caused a fumble late in the game on reception down near the goal line. You know, that was some of the big things that looked you know, that I kind of saw when I was looking at the defense in their play. You know, linebacker Bobby Wagner led the team in tackles again with a couple tackles for loss as well. I'm stoked about where our defense is. I think they're coming together as a unit. I see a little more aggression in the play calling. I see the corners doing what they do. I see Cam and Earl doing what they do. This is one of the best defenses in the league. I'm confident in it. We're rounding into shape at the exact right time. We've got a ton of depth.
What about you guys' pass rush, though? Because that's one of those things where I haven't really seen much out of a pass rush, even last year. You know, even Clemens coming around the edge. I mean, he's a good player, don't get me wrong. But your guys' pass rush does seem to lack a little bit.
That's definitely an area that can be improved.
I mean, thank God you have great corners and safeties.
Sure.
Because otherwise, you know, if you guys had average corners and safeties, it might be a different story.
Right. Well, with the pass rush, you know, I thought it looked a lot better in this game. We did end up with a couple sacks. I think Mayoa is going to be a guy that's going to add to that. I also think that O'Brien Schofield is going to be a guy that we can get in there in that Leo position to take care of that a little bit. Cliff Averill, we're going to have to wait on him a little while longer. Found out today he re-aggravated a hamstring.
Oh, bummer.
He's out indefinitely, so that definitely is kind of a loss. I was hoping that would be helpful. You know, there are reports that Clem might even be back almost week one or possibly week two, which would be great. You get Clemens in there. Mm-hmm. I think Tony McDaniel, the way that he looked in there, the way he pushed the pocket from the middle is going to make a big difference in our pass rush. Because I think our biggest problem with the pass rush last year was just that quarterbacks were able to step up and our outside rushers just couldn't get to him.
Yeah.
So I think that'll make a huge difference. Jordan Hill, that bicep injury that he had, apparently just a strain, not a tear.
That's a good sign because he's been lighting it up in the preseason.
Absolutely. So you get him in there with McDaniel or Michael Bennett, who's, you know, been getting good penetration from the inside as well.
So what you're saying is that it'll at least improve.
It'll be better
as it goes on.
I don't know that pass rush is going to be a strength of this team. Mm-hmm. It's going to be something that you hang your hat on. Is like, say, like the Giants the year they won that Super Bowl, you know, and they were just stacked on that D-line and just, you know, wreaking havoc.
Well, that's exactly what Denver's really tried to do is pass rush. You know, we move defensive ends inside on third downs, you know, just to get that monstrous pass rush. And, of course, Von Miller helps that. But
sure.
It's, I guess, different defenses, different emphasis, you know.
Well, that, and I think you're going to see a difference in the defense this year with Dan Quinn at coordinator. He's definitely more aggressive and a little more creative in the stunts and things like that he's going to pull around the line.
Well, you can be when you have a secondary that's as good as yours too.
You can take
those
gambles.
It really opens up a lot of shit.
Yeah, you know. So I'm not worried about it. I feel like after watching the team today, or not today, but the other day, and watching that game, the week 3 game where the starters played the longest that they usually do, it was an ugly game, but it was an ugly game that we still ended up winning. It was a game that we were in the whole time. You played ugly and you didn't get blown out. And that's all you can ask for, because you're not going to beat people 40-13 every week. You know, you're going to have to win some ugly games where maybe you're penalized.
Oh, yeah,
a few
that's just
times
the way the season goes.
Or you turn the ball over a couple times. So to see that, because that was the big problem at the beginning of the season last year, was just finishing. We were in those ugly games, but we just couldn't find a way to win.
Yep.
And ended up doing that here in this game. We did towards the end of the season last year. I think that has just carried over to the preseason this year. You know, Steven Williams with the touchdown catch to put us ahead late. You know, his one of two receptions. This guy just straight catches bombs.
He's good. Curse is good, too. You guys have had some young receivers that have stepped up.
Curse had a nice block in the game, too, that was really entertaining. So that was fun. But
yeah, that was on a Christian Michael 43-yard touchdown or some shit. It was over 40 yards.
Yeah. And as far as special teams go, because I talked a little about offense and defense, special teams look great. I think
you guys' special teams looks fairly polished at this point.
Yeah. Short of the fact that we had the one punt at the end of the second half, it was the punt that would never fucking end.
God, just penalties, man.
On both teams.
Over and over. And a couple of them, when the dude would go out of bounds, they said he made no attempt to come in. I thought those were horse shit. I thought that play, you just should have been able to move on, take a knee, go into the half. Instead, it was a never-ending fucking second quarter.
Maybe it's just the new emphasis on the emphasis that the refs are putting on certain rules through the preseason. Because they'll call things a little tighter that they're going to try to, you know, put a kibosh to during the season. I think maybe that was part of that.
I hope so, because I don't want to be seeing that shit all season. Players, those gunners, they get knocked out of bounds, and I thought they make decent attempts to get back in, but you know, the refs in that game made it sound like if you take two steps out of bounds, it's a flag.
Right.
Which is bullshit.
Yeah,
sometimes
it
takes you two steps just to go from point A to point B.
Just
back
to
the
catch
field.
Your balance again after you got, you know, nailed by the Gunners, you know.
Yeah, so maybe you're right. There's just a point of emphasis, and they're really trying to hammer it home in the preseason so they don't have to do as much during the regular season.
Yeah.
I hope so, because, man, that was boring football for a while.
It was. I mean, as much as I'm not freaking out about the penalties, they are still a concern.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
but
know.
But that's what the preseason's for. You're ironing shit out. You know,
but my question is this: with our team that is a really physical team that plays the edge of the whistle, are we just gonna, is this just something you have to live with if you're gonna play that style of football?
You would hope not, because some of these personal foul penalties, those have to go.
They have to go.
Kill your team, man. And if those keep happening with the same players, you gotta bench those guys. That's just, there's just no way around it. You can't be having an undisciplined football team.
No,
that's one of the worst things in the entire world. And I don't think you guys will be that. But
I have,
you know, if you have a guy who's committing multiple personal foul penalties,
sure,
in the game, that's something that then you'll need to address.
Here's an interesting stat: who in the NFL had the most penalties and yards by penalties last year?
What team?
Yeah, just take a guess.
I'm going to go with the Chicago Bears.
It was the Baltimore Ravens.
Really?
And they won the Super Bowl.
Huh.
And a couple of the other playoff teams, the Redskins and the Packers and things like that, they all had high penalty years as well. So high penalties isn't exactly indicative of not having success throughout the year.
I think it makes it tougher on you.
Sure does. You got to be a little bit better.
It doesn't make your job easier.
You got to be a little bit
better.
You know,
when you're going on a 1st-and-20 instead of a 1st-and-10.
Right.
I hate holding calls more than you do, because I think they just fucking kill drives to me.
I hate holding calls, don't get me wrong, and I'm sure I'll throw a hat once or twice throughout the season over a holding call.
I'm going to say it's more than that.
Yeah. You're taking the over on that?
I'm taking the over, okay. Game time, and I'm going to win that.
Okay, but
I'll win that by next week in the fourth preseason game.
I know, the one that doesn't matter fucking at all.
That's getting tossed.
But, yeah, it's going to be an interesting year. We'll see how it kind of goes, but this was the dress rehearsal for the regular season, and I don't feel bad about it. I feel like we're ready to start week one, go down to Carolina, and put a spanking on the Panthers. So
there you go. That's all we can really ask for. All
right, man. Well, I think that's pretty much everything I got today.
I think that's it.
Okay. Well, there's only one other thing to say.
In John's we trust.